Hello, welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we simplify the good life. My name is Brock Dittus, and this...
I am not Aaron Flores.
You are not.
I am Tim Mooney. And we are broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
It should be said at this point that Tim is a listener who has been listening for a while, and you are in town for the World Domination Summit, and also to see family, and also to start a bicycle tour.
That's right.
Which is why we're going to talk about all those things.
Yes. So,
sorry, where did we leave? We're the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
Covering day-to-day life, food, alcohol, bicycles, and alternative transportation, arts and culture, communication, and the internets, because it's plural.
That's right. So, welcome to Portland. You've been here for how long now? Five days?
On this trip, I've been here since Friday night.
Okay. Yes.
But it's always in my heart. Portland is in my heart.
There we go. Yeah. And we were just talking. We decided to start recording because we had a good conversation, and I was like, people might want to hear this. So you spent some time in Portland a while back, and we were talking about how the town has changed.
Quite a bit. Yeah. I moved to Portland after I graduated from law school. I'm a semi-recovering lawyer at this point.
Something that needs recovery from.
It does. It does indeed. I was here at a very interesting time in Portland's sort of recent history. It was sort of before the biking culture really took off. I think I read something or heard something recently where somebody said it was 02. Maybe it was on this podcast, perhaps, where somebody had mentioned that the bike culture really took off in 02.
Could be. We were talking to Aileen, yeah, and she's been around since
right.
then.
Yeah, and I biked downtown from where I lived in Sellwood, which is, for those of you who are not Portlanders, that is in Southeast Portland.
It's a cute little hamlet.
They have antiques.
Yeah. And actually now they have have you been there since?
I've been there last year. I haven't been back since this trip.
There's actual like legitimate businesses there now.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
it's great.
It's a cool little area. So I used to bike there across the Sellwood Bridge and downtown, and people thought I was quite weird for biking in.
Yeah.
Now I'd be just one of the bikers. So yeah.
Yeah. And my wife used to do the Sellwood Bridge back when she worked on the west side and lived in the far southeast. So that bridge was floated downstream some...
I understand. I posted a map of the new bridge location on my blog. It was...
yeah.
It's a near and dear bridge to my heart because of how it carried me over the Willamette all those years ago.
Seriously, so. Yeah. And there's a great view from that bridge. It's an interesting part of the river just because it's far enough away from town that it, I don't know, it seems really idyllic. So anyways, hey, we're drinking beer.
Yes. Yeah,
Tim brought the beer today.
It's a housewarming gift for Brock and for Brock and me because we're solo today. So we're rocking Deschutes Brewery, a fine Oregon beer, the Mirror Pond Ale.
That's right.
I used to be able to get when I moved back east for about a minute and a half, and then it was cruelly taken away from me.
Deschutes, hard to find.
Deschutes is unavailable for East Coasters now.
Okay, so they basically dialed back their distribution.
I don't know how it got there in the first place, but whoever did it, God bless them for that one year.
Probably got there on a truck.
Somehow. Petroleum was involved in some way. I'm sure it was not a carbon footprint free.
Well, one coast to the other is just a long ways for it to travel.
Yeah.
When I was in Colorado last year, they were actually talking about, I was hanging out with some New Belgium people, and they were talking about starting a new brewery in Asheville, North Carolina. And part of the reason for that was that they didn't make sense to truck all that beer all the way across the country because it was so popular. You know, everybody wants it, but if they brew it, if they have an East Coast brewing center, then they don't have to spend as much time making it travel.
Yeah, it gets out our way. I'm able to get a lot of their stuff.
Yeah.
It's my Oregon beers that I have to come out here for it, but that's not such a bad thing.
Yeah. So I was going to ask, do you have a favorite beer in DC?
In D.C.
Or like a local beer that you like.
You know, the D.C. beer scene has really been moving. D.C. Brow is a local brewery. In fact, D.C.'s really, in the 10 years that I've lived there since moving from Portland to there, it has really improved quite a bit and become much more livable. And beer is one of those fine things. And there's a bunch of different microbreweries that have popped up. And there's some interesting changes that have been going on in the biking culture there as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. It's by no means Portland by any stretch of the imagination. Anybody who listens from D.C. knows that. But in the last maybe 3 to 4 years, the biking culture has in some ways moved past Portland in some metrics.
Right. Well, there are bike lanes in front of the White House now on Pennsylvania Avenue, right? So that was a big milestone.
And the Capital Bike Share system is a fantastic success.
Fully rolled out.
Absolutely. It keeps growing. The metrics on that are absolutely outstanding. So there's a lot of good things going on. But, you know, DC Brown and some of the local brewers, I tend to go towards the Delaware beaches and Dogfish Head. That's
okay.
Sort of my local-ish.
That's where Dogfish is from?
I believe it's from Delaware, if I'm not mistaken. I can't remember which town, but I want to say it's in the beach towns of there.
Gotcha.
But then again, I mean, you can cross Delaware in 3.5 steps anyways.
Right.
Sorry, Delawareans.
Yeah, no, it's small. Yeah. The only thing smaller is Rhode Island.
Right.
I almost crossed that on a bike last winter. So it's, minuscule.
Right.
But I was going to ask about bike shares as far as the program has been in place for a little while now, but how old is that exactly? I'm not up on my bike share.
It's a couple of years old.
Okay.
And honestly, I don't remember the exact launch date. They started it very small and they grew it organically, and they're a very data driven company, which I think is to their great credit. I mean, mm-hmm. that's how this works. You know, they know when they need bikes in certain places. So you'll see these vans full of bikes that are coming to pull it off of the ones that are at the bottom of the hill at the end of the workday.
And a popular ride.
Yeah, exactly. So the rebalancing effort is very data driven, and they're very open about sharing that data. So a buddy of mine who actually introduced me to this show is constantly downloading that data and nerding out and seeing where it goes, just, you know, because he enjoys that. So
yeah. Is it open? It's available to the public, or?
It is.
Okay.
It's all open sourced in that way. And so you can really see some interesting things with the flow and how traffic on a bike in DC works, at least within the bike sharing system.
Yeah. That's it was interesting to me because I don't follow bike share a lot. I know Portland is about to get theirs, apparently, and it's happening in New York, which Bike Snob has done a ton of writing about. Yeah. I believe Chicago has a system set up.
Yeah, and I think it's all through Alta Share. Is that it's a Portland
based
company.
Yeah,
isn't
Portland
it?
Is going to be Alta, I believe.
Yeah.
Which
is the same as DC.
Yeah. Are you familiar with Mia Burke?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
She had a great book that she co-authored with Joe Kermaski, The Metal Cowboy, and just telling her story of getting here and being one of the very early advocates for bicycle access on the streets of Portland and its metro area, and how tough that was, what a difficult slog it was. But she went on to kind of work with Alta, and I'm going to embarrass myself. I don't know if she started Alta or if she at least was in on the very beginning level. I want to say she started it, but I'm not sure if that's true.
She was a high-end muckety-muck in the
that's
Alta
right.
history.
Yeah, but after working with Portland and working with our congressional representative, Earl Blumenauer of fame and legend.
Earl. Yeah, I am an Earl fan. He has always been. He used to be my member of Congress, but now he will always be my member of Congress.
That's
a resident
right.
of the District of Columbia. I have non-voting Congress style,
say, yeah,
right?
Taxation without representation.
He's my favorite voting member. I'll adopt him as my voting member.
Very good. Yeah. After Mia did all that stuff here in town, she moved on to kind of introduce bicycling and to make bicycling more accessible to more people in more urban areas. Yeah. So I'm proud of her for that. Glad she's doing it. But yeah, it's interesting that bike share has become such a big thing just in the past couple of years.
Yeah.
There's
and
been
interesting,
a lot of
interesting DC became the first real success story, at least to my knowledge.
Yeah.
And somebody out there may correct me on that.
Yeah.
But, it's amazing. You will on any given day be sharing the bike lanes with at least as many people who are on bike share, those red bike, Capital Bike Share bikes,
uh-huh.
as people who own bikes. And
right.
I'm not a member myself, but I know people who really enjoy the system. They are not literally ubiquitous, but they are everywhere.
Yeah.
You can do pretty well with a bike share bike.
You will see them in town.
Yes.
So they are, they're like kind of a cruiser style. Like they're amenable to like work pants and stuff, right?
Yeah.
So.
They're covered up. I should spend a little more time taking a look at the mechanics of it, because I don't know if it's, I think it's a chain, not a belt tribe,
right.
but it is completely covered up.
Chain case.
It is built like a tank. I mean, these bikes look like they could take a hit and keep on going.
Right.
But you know, I mean, I'll bet you they do. there's tons of maintenance that's done on them. And you know, you're always seeing, like I said, with the rebalancing, they're also doing a lot of maintenance and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's interesting. And it's, you know, I love seeing the new things that are coming about. I mean, I think you've talked about it, you know, the concept of the safety bike hasn't changed in what, 100 some odd years.
Right.
Yet now we're starting to see some things that are changing in the world of bikes.
Yeah. And kind of like
exciting.
Yeah. Like, I suppose buses and trains and that sort of thing, when those became big, important players in transportation, there were big advances made in the design to make them work as well as they could. And now that the bicycle is almost a municipal form of transportation, you start to see some of those improvements. So.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. And it's changing how cities operate and how we cater as businesses to bikes. I run my girlfriend's yoga studios. Mm-hmm. And one of the very first things that I did when we opened up these two new spaces, because we opened new ones up relatively recently and within the last few years, was to make sure that bike parking was a part of it. And that was before the district for our studio within DC started becoming more aggressive about putting out more bike parking. But, you know, that was one thing that was a really big part of what we did, because we knew that our clients, our yogis, were going to be coming to our classes by bike. So we darn well better have some good bike parking.
You want to give them the opportunity to park and not worry about it while they're inside.
Absolutely. And now, in fact, just today I was talking with our managers about having locks available to people, because it's not uncommon people will forget their yoga mats, but also not uncommon that they'll come by bike and forget their lock, and we'll have to have it somewhere in the middle of our space. So I think now we're going to invest in a couple of locks to let people borrow. Yeah. So just things like that it's cool that, you know, as someone who owns or operates a business, that you can cater to people that are really good customers and people you want to have come back again and again. And
totally.
I think that's important.
Yeah. Hospitality.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. When I was in DC for the first time, I was really hoping to rent a bike, and there were options available, but they were super expensive and not really practical for, like, at that time I was dirt poor. We had finished our West Coast trip from Bellingham down to San Diego, and then we flew to the East Coast to hang out with my wife's family. And I wanted maybe to get a bike and ride around DC while we were there. We were there for about a week, I think. And it just seemed so prohibitively expensive to get a bike at that point. So the fact that these are available, and you have to have a membership, I assume, a card access or something like that.
Yeah, I think you could do by the hour as well. I mean, it's still catered to the short distance type.
Right.
I mean, if you were going to want to rent a bike for a week, like I did in San Francisco earlier this year when I went out on a tour, you know, I was able to find a place where they could rock a deal, and it was $75 for a week, which, frankly, you know, when you start getting into that kind of money, you're starting to think, should I buy a bike and leave it here, or do I try to sell it or whatever? But in DC, it's still kind of the short-term rental is the key. And it makes sense, because it's catering to the incredible amount of tourists that we have and the short haul kind of commuter types. And that's where bike share, I think, works really well. And at least it's proven itself to be really good. But the tourists, I think the data shows that the tourists are really excited about it, because you can rent for an hour or two through bike share for far less money than through some of the rental companies that I'm sure you were looking at.
With
their horrible looking mountain bikes with their little...
they weren't good looking bikes.
It looks like a fanny pack on the front. And
nobody likes those.
With all apologies to these wonderful people running, I'm sure, fine business. But it's just not my style.
Well, you've got a tour coming up.
I do.
And so you were here for the World Domination Summit. Was there anything that stood out to you at that event? I know you said you saw the trailer for Janipar, the film with Tom Allen.
Which is fantastic. And because life has intervened and a variety of different things, I still haven't seen it. But
it's okay.
Thankfully, he did make available the DVDs to all of us who attended, which is fantastic and really appreciated. And when they show the trailer for it, I think it really resonated with people. It's a great-looking film, and I'm really looking forward to seeing it so I can talk it up and whatnot. But World Domination Summit is a strange name for a very interesting thing. it's my second year going to it. It's run by a local guy, Chris Gullibo. If any of the listeners know what he does, he's into sort of living an unconventional life.
Right. And author of the $100 Startup.
$100 Startup. And last year he gave us all $100 cash. All 1,000 of us walked out of that conference with $100 from him to sort of go out and live what he wrote about.
This is your ticket to your self-actualized
life. It was very Willy Wonka.
Yeah.
I do have to say.
Yeah.
It was very Willy Wonka that he was kind of revealing that, and we all walk out with literally envelopes with $100 bills.
Without the snozzberries.
With no snozzberries, sadly.
Sadly.
But that was what that did for me was the tour that I'm doing this year is sort of the grander vision of what I tried to do last year. And something I've been kicking around through WDS, and it's a lot about people wanting to live their lives in a way that is more on their own terms.
Mm-hmm.
doing things that drive you, that give you passion, and making that maybe part of what you do as work and things along those lines. It's a really, really fascinating set of folks. It's sort of, if you're into TED Talks, there's a lot of crossover with TED Talk folks. Mm-hmm. So in any event, last year I went on this ride down to, and I was trying to make it all the way to San Francisco, but I was a day short in my plans. I did the calculation somewhere around Eureka and realized that I was not going to make my flight back. So
the sand was slipping through the glass.
Exactly. So I hung out in the Redwoods for a few days, which was a totally, totally, totally great treat.
You can't argue with that.
No, and not at all. This year, I did my planning a little bit differently. And in line with some of the things that I've been pulling together with WDS and all the other things that have been coming through my brain lately, I'm trying to find new ways to tour more.
Okay, yeah, because that's the classic problem. And this interleaves into your new project, which we should probably talk about now.
Yeah, it all works together, which is sort of confusing for the listener, I'm sure, but very nice to talk about.
Sure, this is your $100
startup. This is my sort of strange startup. And the idea is, you know, those of us who are into bike touring really, really like it, but so many of us have jobs that are inflexible or don't have. I mean, you're lucky enough that you generally get a lot of time off during the summers for the type of work you do, which is great. I have a job that's fairly flexible, but I need to kind of figure out ways to do more.
Right.
There are a lot of folks that get 2 weeks of vacation. My sister-in-law, my brother's wife, gets 2 weeks a year that she has to declare in January.
Yeah.
And they're limited in how they can use that. So I'm like, well, how would one bike tour on that? So I'm trying to come up with ways within a community that I hope to build through my project called Pedal Shift.
Pedalshift.org?
.net.
Net, excuse me.
The .com was unavailable. And,
really?
Yeah, and I was feeling more net than org.
Is it some? Okay, that's cool.
I don't know why. I don't know who owns it. But in any event, the idea, and it's sort of a metaphor, you know, pedal to push forward and shift to change your life.
Yes.
And how can we find ways to maybe simplify our lives, kind of in accordance with the Sprocket ideals, and find ways we don't need to buy as much stuff, so we don't necessarily have to have the soul-sucking job that pays a little bit more so that we can afford the house that's a couple of bedrooms too big or whatever.
Right.
And maybe find some other ways to work remotely so that we can work on tour. So, circling back to my tour, I am experimenting on this tour by building in 0-mile workdays in towns that I know have Wi-Fi and other amenities that will allow me to do this.
So if you have the internet, you can stop and do your work.
I've scheduled some of my meetings for these days. I mean, I better make these schedules, but you know, I also know that with a smartphone, I might be able to be a little bit more flexible with all these things. But there's a plan involved here.
The wandering data plan.
Exactly. Yeah. So the question ends up being, can you be on tour and work at the same time? Does it detract too much from your enjoyment of the tour? Or can you make this work so that you can go on tour longer, better, more?
Yeah.
And that's what I think the whole Pedal Shift concept is to see if there are ways to work smarter and work in different ways. And my hope is to make this not just me. I don't know everything at all. I've only started bike touring a few years ago. I mean, I've been on a bike since I was a kid.
Yeah.
And the sense of adventure and wonder that, you know, and I think you talked about this a few shows ago as well about, you know, when you get a kid getting his first bike and saying, hey, here you go, kid.
Yeah.
Going out there.
Yeah, totally.
I remember that really well, that all of a sudden these places I couldn't go to, you know, I mean, silly, but you know, McDonald's was a big deal when I was a kid. I could bike to McDonald's.
McFlurries.
You know? So I'm a little older than McChicken or McFlurry, I had to say.
What were they called back then?
Mick not available. So okay, I think we were all burger back in the late 70s when I was rocking that. But anyways, you know, it's that sense of adventure and wonder I still crave. Uh-huh. And I found it again a couple of years ago when I started doing this. And now it's sort of like I want to build a community so that those of us who are wanting to do more of that can come together and give each other ideas. You know, one of the things I've been doing since I've been traveling a lot is I put my place up on Airbnb.
Yeah.
And I'm making money off of that, obviously. I'm hoping to get paid when people stay at my place.
Totally.
And, you know, that is a revenue stream I didn't have before. And my home was sitting there not being used while I was traveling.
So totally.
These are the types of ideas that I want to share. And I want people who have other similar kind of ideas who what they do to help them bike tour a little bit more frequently.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then it gets even deeper than that. You know, my girlfriend is fabulous and she does not bike tour with me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's relationship issues.
Not
you know,
quite her bag.
It's not necessarily her bag. She likes to bike, but she does not want to go 60 miles in any direction and then sleep and then get up and do it again.
Without a shower.
For 3 weeks straight. Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, there are a lot of people, and I'm sure you get this too, amongst maybe some non-bike touring friends, you know, they look at you a little bit crazy.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, yeah. legit crazy. They wouldn't even bike to Vernonia, and that's just one night away. Uh-huh. You know?
Yeah, it makes you a novelty.
It's a total novelty thing. Yeah. So anyways, there's community there. And, you know, when you sort of get into this entrepreneurial state of mind, you're sort of like, you've given up that thought, oh, I don't know if this will work. You know, I'm just interested in seeing if this resonates with people. So
right.
pedalshift.net, folks.
Okay.
If you want to come and, I may turn this into something where I may do a podcast or something else down the road or, you know, I mean, but for now I'm more interested in stories and community and just seeing where it goes. I mean, I think that'll be really cool because I think that when I'm on tour, and I'm sure that you've run into this, you sort of have this little moving city because everybody moves right about the same rate.
So well,
you may not bike together, but you end up laying your head down in a tent in pretty much the same parks along the way down the road, especially if you're doing the coastal route like I'll be doing next week.
Yeah, that is actually the only place I've ever experienced that because most of the other tours I've done have been kind of create your own adventure.
Oh, that's true.
Going
from
place to place and looking at Google Maps and seeing what's there. And,
but
when you take an established tour route, like the statistic I heard going through Oregon is like some 5,000 bicyclists a year or something do the coastal route, which is a lot of people.
Yeah.
And there's only 365 days in the year. So that means that I can't do math. Many of those bicyclists are traveling on the same day.
Exactly.
And will probably be staying in a lot of the same places.
And most of them are probably doing it about this time of year when the weather is, you know, close to perfect and you're not going to get rained on too much.
Right.
Yeah. It's there's a community that's part of going on an established adventure cycling route, for instance, like the Pacific Coast route and
hosted tours that they do.
Well, no, just following their maps.
Oh,
I mean,
right.
You know, it's interesting. You'll find, you know, I can't remember the exact title. It's Biking the Pacific Coast Trail or something like that.
Uh-huh.
You know, almost everybody has that with them, whether it's on their phone because it's on a Kindle. Via Kindle like I have it, or somebody who's got a very dog-eared copy of it, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, you run into the same people. Last year.
Is that the purple book?
I think it's...
They probably have different covers.
They probably do.
The year that we did it, was everybody had the purple book.
Isn't it funny? And there's that sense of community that comes about all that.
Yeah.
Last year, there was a guy that we ran into, and he had a surfboard that he was pulling behind him on a custom-made bamboo surfboard trailer.
Really?
It was cool as hell.
Yeah.
And, you know, to be able to sit down and break bread and eat some dinner with him over a campfire at the end of the day and just be like, oh, how were the waves today?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, knowing that, hey, you know, maybe tomorrow I may not see this guy again. Or, you know, 60 miles down, he may surf a little bit and may catch up with us and may be able to see what life was like for him that day.
That's such a great idea because you're on the coast the entire time on that route. So, I mean, not the entire time, but you have access to the beach almost every day.
Yeah. Yeah. And he took it on. I think he had a couple of days where there were no swells at all, but he had some good stories.
Yeah.
I like repeating that because, you know, those are the types of people you get to meet on tour. And those are the types of people that I'm sort of hoping to attract to this project. And, you know, hey, let's get some ideas. You know, what can you do? What do you do in your life to make touring more a part of what you do?
Yeah.
And it may, you know, for those who have the, you know, 40-hour a week, 2 weeks vacation kind of thing, hopefully they can come away with some ideas to maybe be able to go off on some extra weekend adventures. You know, for those who have it all figured out, come on over, man, because I'd love to hear some more myself. And I have a few ideas too that I want to share, but you know, it's all about collaboration.
Yeah.
I'm excited about it. And in the few days since I kind of wrote my manifesto, you know, the first post and everything,
it's gotten
a few people who I have no idea who they are coming. So that's kind of cool.
Excellent.
And, Sprocket people, come on over.
Well, yeah, we got to give you some exposure. Again, pedalshift.net.
That's right.
N-E-T.
And Brock, I do want to say that I think that the Sprocket podcast was a real inspiration for this because for real, this is a unique show. I mean, you clearly have found a niche and it's created its own community, not just here in Portland. I mean, in a sense, it's a Portland show, but I mean, obviously I listen to it. It reaches way beyond it. You always talk about folks in Texas and other places, you know, this is exactly the type of community that, you know, minimalist lifestyle, bike touring, all these things, they all kind of come together. And this has been a huge inspiration for this project. So thank you for making this happen.
Glad to hear that. Yeah. Well, I think that is the dream, is that the idea that there are more ways to live life than the ways that we've been prescribed. And if we can get away from, like you're saying, the, you know, 40-hour weeks all year long, except for 1 or 2 weeks of vacation, which have so much expectation laid upon them that they can't possibly deliver.
Oh, so true.
honestly, I think I would rather be like, you know, either marginally happy or somewhat disappointed over several weeks in the year than to be completely disappointed for 1 week. So, yeah. And I mean, it's not like that has to happen. But a lot of us are also in a place, especially in this economy, where you can't buy your way out of those unpleasant experiences. Some people, they can afford to kind of buy or pay their way out of the disappointment. Like, you get everything you want. Other people, especially if you're not making a lot of money and you have the house with extra bedrooms and whatnot, you're going to end up with not enough money to do everything that you want to do in those 2 weeks. So,
I
would say definitely, you know, it takes creativity and it takes thinking about, like, what are my options? What can I do? How can I break the mold that I've been raised with, or the one that's been given to me by culture, and move on to something different? So,
totally.
Well, I'm glad. That's good.
Yeah.
Pedal
and
shift.
I'm psyched to be making this attempt at making this community. I'm psyched for my tour. I'm really excited to be going from Portland to San Francisco, you know, and making this happen and experimenting to see, hey, in my own personal life, can I work while I'm on tour? Does that ruin my tour? Does it make me think too much about work? Or does this work perfectly? And am I keeping things rolling back east while I'm over here? And so I'm excited about just this as a grand experiment, and I'm excited to share about it. I'll blog about it. I've got a blog called uncommonlysilly.com.
That's right.
I'm sorry to promote like that.
No,
but
please do.
I just realized that, you know, I'm not going to be talking about the tour so much specifically on Pedal Shift. But yeah, you know, to share that, because I don't know about you, but I consume people's writing on their tours. Well, I followed your blog last summer. I thought that was fascinating.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Yeah.
With the most ridiculously long blog title ever.
It was a long blog title, yeah. But it was fun to read. And I really enjoy reading about other people's adventures because it helps to inspire mine.
Right. Yeah.
That's exciting.
I'm trying to remember if we talked about this in the show at some point or not. There's like the double-edged sword of travel writing is that if you never get the chance to go out, it kind of turns into like porn or something where like you're always consuming it and like, I don't know, instead of doing it. Instead of actually getting into the adventures you want to have, you're always living off of somebody else's momentum. But use the right way, travel writing can inspire you to go out and do your own things.
Absolutely. So, you know, it's like, oh, well, that description, I want to be there.
Right.
You get that a lot from especially well-written stuff. I think there were things that you wrote about. I remember you got super poetic, if I recall correctly.
I might have.
It was pretty cool. And, you know, I was thinking, I don't want to climb those hills in that heat. I remember that.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, when you were describing some of the mornings and some of the things that were going on, it was like, you know, that's, you know, it paints a picture that is really what drives a lot of us who do this.
Yeah.
And it's fun to look at a map and go, I started there and I went there and I saw some really cool things in between that. If I did that by car in an hour instead of a day, I would have missed something.
Yeah.
And that's the real joy that I get out of this, and the freedom and the adventure. I mean, those are the two keywords I feel when you talk about bike touring.
Totally.
That, you know, you just want more of it, you know?
Yeah. I don't know if you get this or not, but when I travel by bike, a lot of my favorite memories and a lot of the things I enjoy most about the travel are not the destination points. Although I enjoy, like on this last trip that we took over the past couple weeks, we went to Mount Rainier and climbed to Paradise, which is...
That's a ride.
Yeah, it's quite a ride. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
But they have chili dogs at the top. I had one. And it was lovely.
I would have had like two or three after that climb.
Yeah, yeah. If I could have gotten away with it, Adele was watching me and I think
I see.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
If I ate two chili dogs, she would have, yeah. If I'd been there on my own, totally, two chili dogs. But as good as that was and as cool as the view was, there's also other spots along the route that, you know, just a place that you stop and you see something cool, or a place where you meet someone that you didn't expect to meet and you bump into them and you have a great conversation. Those are the things that are just as valuable to me as the high points. And like you say, if you travel by automotive vehicle, then you don't get those chances necessarily.
Yeah, so. It's all about the end point.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, the other thing is you earn that climb. You earn that downhill, which so many of us love.
That's right.
Bomb down the other side of
those
hills.
Damn straight you earn the hill.
You earn the hell out of it. And it's really, it changed my perspective on climbs. You know,
yeah.
I used to hate hills. You know, mm-hmm. Back east, it's very flat. The trail I'm on most that takes me out to a cabin that I have in West Virginia is the Chesapeake and Ohio Trail. It's a very famous national park trail. It's, I think, the narrowest national park in the world.
Oh, yeah.
In the country.
And but that's it follows the canal for more than 100 miles?
184 miles.
That's right.
Until you hit a town in western Maryland. And then there's another trail that starts 20 feet later that takes you to Pittsburgh.
To Pittsburgh. I've heard about this. I would like to do this someday.
The Great Allegheny Passage. Well, I have a night for you to stay in, at my place.
Okay.
The panhandle of West Virginia.
But, well, thank you.
It's fantastic, but you know, there's not a lot of hills involved. But it's funny to see, after doing some of these tours out west, where there's, you know, real climbs.
Yeah.
And people talking about their, you know, the 1% grades for a couple of miles going hill, all capital letters.
Seriously,
you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of funny, but you know what? I'm just so glad that people do it. People do it of all ages, all athletic types. I wouldn't consider myself a super athlete by any stretch of the imagination, mm-hmm. yet I feel like I'm in some small percentage of people that pull off these kinds of things, and it makes you feel, hey, I'm doing something cool, and,
yeah.
and my body is driving this vehicle, this wheeled vehicle through my own power all these miles. That's just there's something that's really thrilling about that sort of captures that same imagination that I had when I was a kid and got my first bike and could go past Harvest Road where I lived back in the day.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So you and your lady friend, you talked about, she doesn't really get into the bicycle touring thing.
She doesn't do the touring, but I will say she's really latched on to bike culture within DC.
Uh-huh.
She loves, I got her a pink cruiser, you know,
there
one of those
go.
Beach cruisers.
It's cute.
Oh, she loves it. She loves it to death. And we're going to be traveling with both our bikes when we're doing, she's an author and she does a whole bunch of different things in addition to owning the yoga studios. And we're going to bring our bikes with us. We're doing a book tour in the fall. And, you know, that was one of the first things, you know, that we wanted to have our bikes with us as
yeah.
part of this adventure, because we were in France last year. And we were able to bike from our campground into town, and that was a really, you know, cool adventure thing for her.
Yeah.
It was on a smaller scale in a different way, but you know, we went to go soap shopping in this town in the
sure.
middle, in the south of France, and she
yeah.
was super excited about that.
And camping is way cheaper than a hotel.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So we're doing this really cool book tour for her latest book, and you know, another. I mean, hey, I guess this goes into pedal shift a little bit as well. You know. This is my unique job that I've been able to fashion, and you know, I get to travel around North America and help meet the community that she's created
yeah.
over the years, and you know, hand deliver these books to these folks that are lining up to say hello. So it's kind of cool, and that was all based on a podcast as well. So you know, it all sort of, all this stuff comes full circle: podcasts and community. And
that's the thing. Start a podcast, you'll be rich. You can do whatever you
oh,
want.
Oh yeah, you can tell here. I mean, you know, moving on up from the southeast side.
You can tell by the echo in this room that I live in a palatial mansion. But I was going to ask just about, you said maybe you'd be fielding some information, people's experiences about like, how do you maintain a relationship and be separated for periods of time?
Yeah, I think you got to have the right relationship too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, Kimberly, my beloved, mm-hmm. my girl, she was just in France for 6 weeks
uh-huh.
and she was running some retreats out in Paris, and you know, that's not easy, you know, to be apart from somebody like that. But I tell you what, you know, you've got FaceTime and Skype. And I mean, we saw each other every day for sometimes an hour or two. And
right.
it's free.
Like the technology makes it easier to stay connected.
I think it's totally different. You know,
yeah.
but me going on bike tour, I don't necessarily always have that kind of connectivity. So I think bike touring is a little bit harder because she has to accept, and she does, that there are going to be days when she's not going to hear from me because I am in a place that has zero connectivity.
And, right.
You know, that's not necessarily always super easy, but you know, with somebody like her who understands how important it is to me to go off on these adventures,
it seems
works.
Like that's a big piece of it too, is if,
yeah.
if the value is recognized and accepted by both parties.
Sure.
Then that makes it a lot easier.
And you know, I mean, it's a two-way street. She has a unique role. I mean, she's got fans all around the world. I mean, literally. I mean, we get emails from Australia and stuff like that. I mean,
right.
I have a persona in her world. I am Le Beau, which is kind of funny. So people, you know, my sense of privacy is not quite the same because I am part of her world and her
right.
character and in you know, in her writings and things along those
lines. There's tons of people that know something about you. It's you know nothing about. You don't even know who they are.
Brock, I'm going to be straight up. People know a lot about me that I don't know.
It's kind of fucked up, isn't it?
It's a little
it's
weird.
Ridiculous.
Well, you know, I came in here and, you know, I was like, so Brock, what are you doing this summer? Are you still driving the bus? And, you know, that didn't faze you. But, you know, I mean,
right.
We hadn't met before. You know,
exactly.
We're in this new place where we're sharing a lot of things.
Yeah.
But, you know, so anyways, I guess to come back to the point, you know, I accept a lot of things about what it means to be with a woman who has... spends a lot of time in her passions, and some of her highest priorities are not necessarily going to be me. They're going to be some of the projects that she's working on.
Right.
I'm maybe 1A or 1B, but, you know, and I'm cool with that. And that's part of the give and take. And I think that's part of a good relationship generally. And we talk about relationships periodically on her podcast too.
Do you want
to
promote that now just so people can get into it if they want to?
I swear, everybody who's listening, I swear, I did not come here to promote every single website and thing I'm involved in. I'm
but
just saying
again,
that right now.
I would have asked you to do so if you had not
true,
done
Brock.
It by the time we
Twist
got to
my
the
arm.
End.
Thank you, Brock. At KimberlyWilson.com, that's my lovely other half. And Tranquility Du Jour is her podcast, and I have produced that since the very beginning, about 9 years. We went over 2 million downloads the other day, which was really freaky. And
that's
weird.
A long live.
It is. And she got in early, so that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And we're doing the book tour is called Tranquility Tour, and tranquilitytour.com. I think we've now covered it all.
Covered
Thank
all
you,
stuff.
Though.
Yeah, yeah.
I appreciate it. And the thing that I love about all of these different projects is the communities that are involved. I mean, I'm always excited when I meet somebody who says, I came here to your yoga studio because I've been listening to Kimberly's podcast since 2007.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they're from Australia or they're from California or they're from someplace totally remotely. And the podcast was something that connected and found like-minded community. And that's just the power of this medium. And, you know, I know you're getting people from, well, you got me from D.C., people from all around the world, country, et cetera, are connecting to this message. And there's mm-hmm. a community around this.
Right.
And, you know, there are some podcasts that have really broad-based messages and gets millions and millions of people every week. And then there are sort of niche stuff like the stuff that I am thinking about doing and stuff like that, that I'd be thrilled if a couple dozen people were super psyched about it.
Right, right.
100. Whoa, cool. You know? but it doesn't matter because it's all about the experience and bringing those people together. It's exciting. I mean, there's just a lot of cool stuff going on with what we have available to us today. There's downsides, but, you know, there's the community building that you can do to find like-minded people is the really exciting part about it. And mm-hmm. that's what's really exciting about this tour that we're going to do because, you know, I've never been to Calgary, but there are a lot of people that apparently like Kimberly's stuff in Calgary. So we're going to meet them and we're going to be hand delivering their books to them.
That's way up north too.
It's way up north. And they just had to deal with some flooding and some horrible issues up there. So I'm hoping that they're all doing okay up there and we're excited to see them in October. So
Yeah. So the tour coming up, it's going to be starting from Portland. Going out of the coast?
The bike tour that I'm on, yes.
Right.
I have multiple tours. I have crazy stuff going on.
I should have clarified, yes.
Serious. It's fine. I lead a very unusual life. We'll just put it that way.
You're a professional tourist.
It feels like it this year. Yes, the bike tour that starts next Monday, I'll be rocking at the coastal route. I'll be going out and hitting Tillamook and working my way down sort of the usual route that most people do, mm-hmm. Highway 101 all the way down and then up and over into Crescent City and then good old Leggett Hill.
There you go.
Have you done Leggett Hill before?
I have, yeah.
That's something else, isn't it?
I remember my recollection of our experience was that everyone said, the hill at Leggett's going to be crazy. And then having done it and comparing it to other hills that I've ridden, I don't think it was the steepest or biggest hill I'd ridden up on a bike when I got there. And in comparison, I feel like it kind of pales. I mean, it depends on where you are physically, where you are with your own energy reserves. Like if you got a good night's sleep or something,
there's a campground right before it. We should mention that Leggett Hill is the highest point on the coastal tour.
Yes.
It is when you cross over from sort of, the non-coastal side of the California mountains up and over to essentially highway where the Pacific Coast Highway begins, Highway 1. You're transitioning from Highway 101 up and over the mountains to Highway 1.
So right. Yeah. And you're going from the Redwood National Park there over to the coast. So,
and it's spectacular. It's a hard climb, but you're right. It's not the worst thing in the world.
Totally.
But it's the hardest thing you got to do that day. And it's a spectacular finish.
Yeah. The most disappointing thing to me about the Leggett Hill was not the hill itself, but actually after that, once you've coasted down, there's a smaller second hill that you're not in a good shit. You're not in a good mental space to do you've after just, having done.
Yeah,
a large
you've just
one,
coasted
so.
Down about maybe 10 miles worth.
Yeah,
and you're getting the reward for that. That
exactly.
big morning of climbing that you just did, and then all of a sudden there is this steep little. If you'll pardon my phrase, shitty little hill that
yes.
just gets in the way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing between you and the spectacular coastline
right.
and then Fort Bragg down the road, which is just kind of the end of your day.
Totally.
And man, that sucks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. but also, I mean, it's the fact that you can't use any of your downhill momentum. As I recall, you end up coasting down to the bottom of the Leggett Hill and then you get to the second hill and you have there's no momentum. You're
None.
Suddenly just standing still at the bottom of the hill.
Throw
and
down
saying,
to granny gear and just start climbing again.
Got to do this again.
Yeah.
But it's not so bad.
It's not as long. It's steeper, but it's not as long.
Uh-huh.
That's
yeah.
the thing. And it has no name. And it's funny. Anytime you mention...
It has no name.
It has no name. And anytime you mention Leggett Hill to somebody
yeah.
who's done this,
yeah.
they go, yeah, Leggett's pretty tough, but... Oh God, that second hill! Oh, that second hill!
Yeah.
So it's pretty funny, and you know we keep talking about community and common experiences. It's fun to talk to people who have done this. You know, you
yeah.
say Leggett, that means something to people who
totally.
Have done this.
To commiserate,
exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, I think it's all worth it too. At least I depends on the weather, but I remember popping out onto the ocean from that experience and seeing that the water had changed. Like suddenly it was a California ocean instead of coming down from like, you know, Southern Oregon, and Crescent City was cloaked in fog when we were there. So everything was gray. The ocean was green. It was kind of a monochromatic palette. And then getting out to Sonoma County and seeing sun and seeing the water. And I can't guarantee any of you that do this. I can't guarantee that will happen for you. It might be cloudy when you get there, but for us, I just remember like thinking decisively, this isn't Southern California, but like I'm finally getting the California beach experience I was looking for.
I think you put it just perfectly. There is a difference between what the Pacific looks like as it crashes onto the shores after that point,
yeah.
Compared to what it is in Oregon. It's not better. It's just different.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really cool. And it's one of the great aspects of that ride
yeah.
is that you see how things change and you get to go through the dunes in Southern Oregon. You get to see what that looks like, and the rocky outcrops of the beaches that are, you know, straight out from here in Portland, and, you know, Haystack Rock and all that other kind of cool stuff.
Yeah.
And just how that just all changes. And then as you continue your way down, and then you get the great reward of crossing the Golden Gate in San Francisco, which is
totally
just the great ending for those types of things. If you've never ridden across the Golden Gate by bike, it is an amazing experience, and especially it's a great reward after a tour of that kind of magnitude.
Yeah,
and,
definitely.
I'm looking forward to it. August 2nd. Hey, if you're in San Francisco,
August 2nd, get in touch.
Yeah, you'll just. I have orange Ortley panniers and a green bike, so you know if you see
yeah.
me, say hi.
Tim Mooney on Twitter.
Yeah, there you go.
Easy to find.
More promotion, more raw promotion from Brock.
That's
I'm
right.
telling you, people, I did not ask for this degree of ridiculous promotion, but I appreciate it. Thank you, Brock.
Well, it's the podcaster's secret is that you really don't have much to talk about yourself, so you talk a lot about other people.
That's true. Yeah, at Brock Dittus, and we got to promote your stuff a little bit more.
No, people know what that is already.
That's true. Brockman, yeah. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
There's some at Brock Dittus out there who's about to get
a
few hundred extra follows.
Exactly. I was going to ask, is there anything else with the coastal route that you remember and anything that you're anticipating? And while you're thinking about that, let me toss another piece of information at you. I just read a press release that the city of Florence opened a new hiker-biker site with windbreaks from repurposed lumber and places to hitch your bicycle to with a lock or something. So
I may change my entire schedule based on that campground.
Yeah.
That campground sounds amazing. I'm excited about it. The things I remember the most is how incredible the states of Oregon and California are at hiker bikers.
Yeah.
What an amazing resource. If mm-hmm. you are at all interested in doing this kind of a bike tour, even if you're not doing something crazy like me going between two major cities, and wanting to just experience it for a couple of days, I'll tell you, both states do a really good job. I prefer Oregon, but I'm a biased kind of guy when it comes to Oregon. So
yeah, yeah.
But really tremendous resources that are available along that route, and I'm really excited to see this one in Florence. So
totally.
What am I'm anticipating some this is the first time I've ever done a solo tour of this.
Oh, right. Because the last time you were with other people.
A buddy of mine, I call him, he doesn't like publicity, so sure. I refer to him as Mysterious James in
Mysterious
my blog.
James.
His name is James, and hello, James. I know you're listening. I promised I would not tell his actual name.
Right, right.
He lives in San Francisco. Oh, so James, if you know James in San Francisco, say hi.
Right. There's only one of those.
There's only, yeah, there's, who knows? Who knows where he's at? In any event, yeah, so last year, there's something that's really nice about touring with somebody.
Uh-huh.
And that's all I've ever done. I've never done more than a couple of days solo.
Yeah.
I've biked out. I live in DC, but I've got a cabin in West Virginia that I can get to by the CNO, and it's a 2-day ride. And so, you know, I'll do that myself.
Okay.
But this is long. So, you know, I'm anticipating, I've been accused of being a bit of a talker. So I suspect that I'll probably end up,
that's dubious,
you know, well, talking to people, you know, along the route. And like we talked about before, there's those many communities that sort of develop as you ride along there.
Mm-hmm.
So I anticipate that my interactions with people along the route will be interesting, and I'm looking forward to those kinds of stories. I got some great stories from last year. Like I mentioned, the surfer guy, another guy that I met last year, he was a viola player in,
oh, really?
In movies you've heard of.
Oh.
And we ran into him, and he had one of those. At first, you know, not to get all into our whole Fred speak here, but you know, he was all decked out in his Lycra and stuff like that, and his
right.
little skinny road bike, and this little package on front. He was going ultra light camping, like, you know, with a bivy and things like that.
Sure.
So at first, you know, I was sort of like, oh, what's this guy going to be like? And he turned out to be a real delight. We ended up having dinner with him in Fortuna at a brewery. And, you know, he's telling us stories about playing viola in Titanic and all these other things, and how, wow, he gets residual checks from these movies.
Right.
Where am I going to meet somebody like that? You know, it's just, that's what I'm looking forward to, is maybe repeating those types of experiences.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes on tour, there's just a small world. You'll run into somebody that you either know or met before. Who knows? Maybe I'll run into one of the people that I knew last year.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm excited about that. And I'm excited about the adventure of it all. It's hard, but it's fun.
Yeah.
And who knows what's going to happen? Maybe my channel will break on Legged Hill, and maybe I'll have to figure something out. You know, I'm going to have to use my own resources to figure out my guile and cunning to figure
That's
out how
right.
to fix my bike with, you know, a broken chain and a couple of tire tubes, you know.
Do you have a chain breaker?
I do. Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
I'm not gonna use tubes or something.
Just tie it together.
I do. Yeah. It's funny. You know, I'm not a mechanical guy. I can do little things on my bike, but you know, it's like, you know, there's kind of that, oh, what happens if kind of thing. You know,
right.
Tour
right.
of this magnitude.
Have you broken a chain before?
I did, but luckily not on a tour. I did it about a mile away from my cabin. So I called my girlfriend. I was like, Kimberly, can you come and pick me up? But MJ, Mysterious James, did it on Leggett Hill last year.
Oh, really? Oh, so that happened to him.
It happened to him.
Poor
so,
guy.
You know, he luckily was able to cobble together through some mechanical, you know, ingenuity.
Uh-huh.
And a guy who was following a couple of yards back, who was a bike mechanic.
Yeah, he knew how to do it.
That was helpful.
Yeah.
That was kismet, and that helped him get through.
Totally.
So, yeah, I mean, and that's the other cool thing is that, you know, on a route like this, there's somebody who's going to be passing by. You know, I read something recently, I think it was from one of the DC bike bloggers, about how often when somebody's broken down on the side, how often people say, hey, you okay? You okay?
Yeah.
And that it's just so typical. In fact, sometimes it can be annoying because you're sitting there, dude, all I've got is a flat tire. It's cool.
Leave me alone. I can take care of it.
I'm cool with this. I appreciate it,
yeah,
but I got this. And, but it's nice. This bike touring community is really, really good at helping people out. You know, if you need I've given my spare tube to people before. And, mm-hmm, if I ever need it, I wouldn't expect, but I have a funny feeling that I would get that reciprocity.
Karma comes around.
You bet.
Yeah.
You bet.
Well, I hope, I wish you the best in mechanical success that the bicycle holds together.
I particularly appreciate that.
Tell us a little bit about the Green Goblin, because this is your bike that lives in Oregon.
This is In fact, you're able to see it. I have my back to it.
We'll photograph it.
Yeah. Oh, the Goblin appreciates that. I never named my bikes.
Yeah.
But for some reason, this bike screamed a need for a name. I, as everybody is probably aware of at this point, I live in Washington, D.C., and I'm out here because I've got family here. And, you know, with all the times that I wanted to do a bike tour, it's just ridiculous. So we talked about this. Actually, I sent an email to you about how expensive it is to fly your bike back and forth.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, I figured I'm going to do at least a couple of tours on a bike. So I went to the bike co-op in Alberta and saw this vintage, you know, cool little safari handlebar mustache, you know, front, just like my newer model version of it that I ride back east.
Okay.
And
so
it's
very familiar.
It's a familiar ride. It's a smaller frame. It's a little, maybe a touch too small for me, okay. But you know what? It works.
Yeah.
And it was a used bike and it's vintage and it took me forever to find information on it. I didn't know what year it was until the other day. I somehow found it. It's a 1998 bike.
Okay.
So it's true vintage.
Yeah.
And it's got some wacky things. It's got this reverse spring sprockety thing that the chain moves in the opposite direction you would expect. I mean,
interesting.
It's fascinating. The Goblin has got this crazy green shade to it. So I, as an old comic book reader from back in the day, it reminded me of the Green Goblin, the old Spider-Man villain.
Yeah.
And I was like, this bike's been through. You can tell it's got some chip paint. It's been through a few battles. And it's got a bit of an attitude. Mm-hmm. So I said Green Goblin. And then I think I've shortened it to the Goblin now.
There we go.
Then my brother's wife, my sister-in-law, she does beer distribution locally. And she, Stone Brewing out of San Diego.
Oh, yeah.
Has
none of us are worthy.
Exactly. Well, they have the Gargoyle.
Right, right.
And we went a couple of nights before I left last year. She gave me the sticker of the Gargoyle with the big pint of beer. And I said, that is the personality of this bike. So it's proudly embellished on this. And a couple weeks ago, for the first time back east, I found that same beer at a little local store and around the corner from my place. And I said, I texted my brother right away. I said, has the Goblin started to arise? Because the beer, I took a picture of the beer. I was like, it must know. It's funny, you know, I bikes to me are sort of machines, but this one,
it's
got
personality.
There's something weird about this one. Yeah. So I'm curious, you know, with pedal shift, you know, do people in this biking community that I hope to bring about, you know, do people name their bikes or am I just the weird one with this one?
Right.
You know,
I don't name mine. I've always wanted to name my bikes, but it's not a thing that I've ever, whatever inclination it takes, I've never had that inspiration hasn't struck. So,
You got the tall bike, you know, just tall bike.
The lamplighter, I guess, because that's the style I think it was fashioned in. But yeah,
I suppose part of it was that both of mine are technically the same model. They're Novara Safaris. So, you know,
there
the one back east is the Safari. So this one couldn't be the Safari. So it had a bit of an attitude and I created a personality. So there you go.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things we had our fundraising campaign last year, and you generously offered to waive your ride with me. But I'm gonna say, if we stop this recording, could we go out and ride like up Mount Tabor, for example?
Oh yes, we are very close to said volcano. Yes, let's ride up a volcano. I think that'll work.
Sounds good.
That
well,
sounds good.
Tim Mooney, thank you for coming. Thank you for being on the show. And again, it's at Tim Mooney. It's pedalshift.net. And what else?
Tim-Mooney.com.
Okay.
UncommonlySilly.com. My God,
perfect.
I have a lot of stuff going on. I'm sorry, people.
No worries. No, they'll voraciously devour it, I'm sure. Do you want to read the ending credits?
Absolutely.
All right. Sounds good. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that needs to be said. I don't know when this is going out yet. I'm sure it'll be within a week or something. We've got so much content. It's probably going to be like a twice weekly show for the month of July just because people are coming out of the woodwork.
Perfect.
So,
that's perfect.
Good times. But this is the end.
Find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Send feedback about the program and suggestions for topics and or guests and or drinks. Write us via email. The address is thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com or call and leave us a message at 503-847-9774. Connect with us on Twitter at Sprocket Podcast. It's an awesome follow. Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for providing our theme music. Find him on the internet at ryanjlane.bandcamp.com. That's a great song, isn't it?
Yeah.
And thanks to Hurtbird for the song we don't hear anymore because we don't do news as much.
Yeah, we'll get back to it.
Also
someday.
An awesome song, hurtbirdmusic.com.
All right. Well, this is the very end. Everybody have a good unspecified period of time. We'll talk to you soon. Sometimes it's guests that arrive, and they expect it to be like NPR or something, and then they find out we're just a bunch of jagoffs that drink beer, and then they're supremely uncomfortable.
Here, and you're far enough off of
Cesar
Chavez, which I still have to get used to saying.
That's weird, isn't it?
I'm happy to say it, but
yeah.
I, it, it, I'm, It's very 39th to me still. Yeah.
So now, anyways, we can do this professionally. So
fantastic.
Why not?